It may be cold and dreary, but there's still work to be done outside and plenty of planning to be done inside as you dream about spring and summer. It's Horticulture Day today. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension horticulturist, will be here. We'll talk about pruning trees, when to do it, and how to do it. And maybe you've been leafing through seed catalogs and thinking about what you'd like to plant this spring. We'll answer your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better when the growing season starts again. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and after a couple of weeks of ice, mud, and gloom over most of the state, the thought of working outside may not be very appealing right now, but the sun is peeking out a little bit today, and of course, there is work to be done. This hour, we're going to talk about pruning trees. And of course, as the hour goes on, we'll also answer your questions about the things you'd like to grow or grow better. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me today, Jeff Iles, professor and chair in the horticulture department at Iowa State University. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today.
It's great to be here. We froze walking across campus this morning.
Richard Giron is also also here, ISU Extension horticulturist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Is the studio
sun
warm?
The sun is shining, though, outside. It's very nice.
That's nice.
That
the
regard.
Sun has not yet reached this side of the state, but we have high hopes. Such high hopes. That would be restorative to see a little bit of sunshine. All right. We're going to talk about pruning trees today, and it can be time to get out there and start pruning, or at least making a plan to start pruning. Jeff, what should we be thinking about right now?
Right. Well, I like pruning in the late dormant season, so we're not quite there yet. And in fact, on a day like today where we've lost our cold acclimation, and I'm speaking about myself, it wouldn't be a real pleasant day to be outside.
No.
But I like pruning when the trees have lost their leaves. You can see architecture of the plant very clearly then. And when plants begin to grow, trees begin to grow in the spring, those pruning wounds close very quickly. So pruning in late February throughout the month of March is really a great time frame. But there's certainly nothing to prevent you now from going out and taking stock of what you have. And I've really been focusing a lot in my presentations around the state, around the Midwest, on young tree pruning. I mean, the big trees we should be leaving to the arborists, the people that are trained to get up in trees with the power equipment. But our young trees, the ones we planted over the past 5 to 10 years, should not be neglected. And I see an awful lot of trees in Ames and around the state that have been planted, and yet nobody's gone back to do the important training. Kind of like when you train a dog. I mean, you can't just do it for the first weekend. It's something you do for a while.
It is easy, though, once you've got a tree in the ground and growing well, to not think about it.
Yeah, you don't think about it. And then one day you do think about it. And by then, it's a bit too late. So ideally, you'd like to make your corrective pruning cuts when the tree is young and when the branches you're removing are small. Trees, remember, to a tree, a pruning wound is a wound, and it is a damaging thing, and trees must cope with it. And so the smaller the wound, the easier it is for the plant to respond to that wound, close it, compartmentalize it, and carry on with life. If we wait too long, we end up removing large branches, which leaves big holes in the canopy and makes our neighbors laugh at us. So,
well, and you mentioned that you like to do your pruning in the late dormant
right.
season. We've had a lot of warm temperatures, a lot of above freezing temperatures this winter. Does that give you any pause about thinking how long the dormant season is going to be?
No, because the dormant season is the dormant season. Plants won't begin to grow until April, at least functionally. And so wound closure won't really occur much until we have warmer weather on a permanent basis. So I hate to prune in midwinter. That always could result in some death of the tissues around the pruning wound. So I'm a much bigger fan of waiting till right before growth commences. And March usually is rather comfortable. We might get a nice 40-degree day. to do some pruning. So it's easier on us and it's better for the plant. However, with all that said, there's some new research that tells us that summer pruning is also very good, very acceptable. In fact, pruning wounds close faster when the plant is actively growing. And so if you don't get your pruning done in March, you can go back and prune in May, June, and July.
Yeah, the big exception to that rule, though.
Well, the big exception, and if Vitosh were here, he'd be all over me by now. I knew that's where you were going. In fact, I could hear your inner Vitosh.
We all have one.
Coming out. It is unfortunate. But obviously, oak trees are best pruned in the dormant season, should only be pruned in the dormant season because of the specter of oak wilt. So, right. Thank you, Charity.
No problem.
Darn it.
So, right. So you like to prune basically February, March, and oaks need to be pruned in the dormant season.
Right.
So no putting that off.
You
no
know,
procrastination.
It might be easier to say when you probably shouldn't prune. Now, we've already trotted out the example of oak, but I don't like to prune during bud break and leaf expansion. So what the heck does that mean? Well, as we all know, the trees will begin to, the buds will begin to swell, they'll begin to grow. And that time of the year, the bark is really filled with a lot of water. The bark rips very easily. And so I usually call a halt to pruning during that time in April, when buds are expanding, leaves are just beginning to form. Also, the plant is devoting a lot of its energy to a growth at that time of the year, and so why divert it to wound maintenance? So I try to avoid that time of the year, and I also try to avoid pruning in the fall because plants are getting ready for winter and don't need to cope with the stress of pruning.
All right, let's say I've put a couple trees in, you know, and they're growing well,
yes.
And maybe that was 5 years ago or so.
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah. So when you look at the trees that are growing in your landscape, the young trees, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
When you talk about tree training,
sure.
What's important?
Well, in general, and these are generalizations, but I'm looking for a nice, strong central leader. Now, with a crab apple or something that tends to branch out more like a shrub, that becomes less important. But on a lot of our shade trees, I want to see a central leader. I want to see good branch spacing up and down the stem. Branches shouldn't be too close together. But perhaps most importantly, hopefully you see lots of lower branches on your tree, those that are closer to the ground. Those are important because they're helping plants develop roots and also develop good stem diameter. And they need to be left on for a period of time. Now, as the plant matures in the landscape, we begin to limit up if that's our goal. But we don't take all the lower branches off at once. And so pruning becomes one of these operations that should be done on an annual basis, maybe twice a year. But it's the center leader development, it's the good branch spacing around that leader, and it's paying attention to those lower branches, leaving them on, and then gradually taking them off as the plant grows and matures.
Well, and those lower branches are the ones that we tend to bump our heads on, and
yep.
You know, you can't mow too
sure.
close to the tree, although you should have nice mulch around that tree, I've heard.
Right, right.
so you don't have to mow too closely anyway.
So there's a middle ground, though, Charity. So if you don't like the lower branches, and again, they can be a hindrance to a lot of our yard maintenance work, you can shorten them up, leave them still in place, but you can shorten them because they're going to be temporary anyway. And they might look a little funny for a while, but if you shorten them, don't let them grow to their full extent, they're still providing value for that plant. And then you come back in a year or two and remove them totally back to the main stem.
Now, a lot of us do tend to procrastinate. So let's say you've procrastinated for a while and you have a lot of pruning to do.
Right.
Is pruning stressful to the tree? Is too much going to be a problem?
Well, too much is not good, but even if you've neglected pruning or have forgotten about it, it's never too late to go back and fix some wrongs. But you try not to take more than 20-25% of the tree tissue, the tree canopy, away at any one time. So limit yourself to that and you'll be okay. But if there's a flaw, and if that flaw is a flaw that could 20 years down the road cause the tree to split, then you'd better do something about it now. I'd much rather correct a problem, even if it violates that 20 or 25% tissue removal law that I just trotted out.
Than to have a major, major problem
years
down the road.
And one thing I see an awful lot of are trees with codominant stems or multiple leaders. And typically those aren't good, but if they're associated with a weak branch angle, then those things can split down the road. So I'd much rather take care of it when the plant is young. But even if it's not young, I still would like to take care of it and preserve the life of that tree, at least give it a fighting chance.
Now, maybe it doesn't sound like there's much to know when you're actually thinking about cutting a branch off, but there are better ways to do it than just hacking away at a branch. What do you need to do to make sure this pruning is done properly?
Well, there's a couple of great extension publications that deal with this topic, and pictures in this case, even though this is the best radio program in the country, the charity, pictures are better than words sometimes, but you don't want to make a flush cut. When you take a branch off a tree, back in the day, we would try to remove it as close to the main stem as we could. We now know that was flawed policy. So we try to stay outside of a couple of landmarks. And the best way to learn about pruning, though, is to walk through the woods and watch how trees drop their branches all by themselves. And they don't do it flush. They do it outside of something called a branch collar. And it's typically kind of a swollen area at the base of the branch, and we try to prune to the outside of that. And if we do that, then we create a small wound, and the tree goes on with life without too much damage.
All right. And of course, we worry about those wounds, and there's a lot of folklore still about what you should do to a wound. Do you have to do anything to treat that wound once you've cut a branch off?
Not really. I mean, in the case of oak, if you have to prune during the growing season, then we might use some kind of a wound dressing. But 99% of the time, the wound dressings don't really do anything for the plant. They make us feel better, but they don't really do much, if anything, for the plant, and might even retard the wound closure process. So, no, if you prune properly, follow the right mechanics, do it at the right time of the year, and use a good saw, then there's nothing else to be done. There is nothing to be slapped on the wound to make it close any faster.
Now, when you look at a tree and you see that there's a flaw, I know that some people really want to do something not to take more branches off, but to fix the flaw in a tree.
Oh.
Are there things you can do, like bolting things together so that that flaw will heal and close?
You know, there are some companies and some applications of installing hardware that make perfect sense. If you have an older tree that you feel and the arborist might feel needs some shoring up, then the installation of hardware, and there's all kinds of new gadgets and devices out there, that makes perfect sense. But if you've got a tree that is dangerous otherwise, just remember that the installation of hardware can never make a tree 100% safe again, as if any tree is 100% safe. Even healthy, strong-looking trees will sometimes drop a branch without any notice. So this is one of those situations that has to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. Get yourself a good arborist that is trained and insured and has good reputation. And you might even get a couple of assessments about what you should do with a plant that you think might need some shoring up.
But, all right. And speaking about further education or arborists, you have your world famous shade tree short course coming up this spring, right?
Well, it has become my baby, although this thing got started way back in the day with Dr. Sandy McNabb in response to Dutch elm disease. But 61 years later, here we are, and it's a great program. So,
all right. So the shade tree short course is coming up at Iowa State University, February 21st through the 23rd. You can find more information online if you search for the shade tree short course at Iowa State University. We'll put up a link on our Twitter feed as well. With me today, Jeff Iles, professor and chair in the horticulture department at Iowa State University, Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. They are both here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Duran, ISU Extension Horticulturist. And of course, we've been talking about tree pruning. Jeff is here to answer all of your tree questions today, but I also know that a lot of people have been spending a lot of time dealing with the gloom and the lack of sunshine by leafing through those seed catalogs and thinking about what they might want to plant in the spring. So if you have some questions on those subjects, Richard can cover those as well. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question from Sandra. She says, we have four mature cedar trees in the backyard of our house that we've lived in for 9 years. This year, for the first time, our lawn has been completely taken over by little cedar seedlings. When they started appearing, we tried to pull them one by one, and we tried to apply weed killer, but it's barely made a dent. Now we look out over the lawn and there's a sea of little cedars poking up out of the snow and some of our neighbors' lawns too, which does not bode well. What can we do? I think an invasion.
Yes. I think if you mow them on a regular basis, that at some point they're going to give up, that they can't tolerate repeated cutting. So I would keep on doing that or go out there and simply cut them off of the ground. If you cut them off of the ground, that should kill them.
All right, and so, these are our little cedar seedlings. They're not they're not connected to the big trees?
Nope, they're from seed. They do a very good job of producing seed and coming up from that seed. So that's why we see these red cedars in roadside ditches, pastures, other areas. They're very good at germination.
And tenacious.
Yes.
All right, so mow.
Yes, good or cut.
All right. Here's a question from Roy. I understand how to prune apple trees, but how do you decide what branches to prune on pear, peach, and plum trees?
Basically, what I would look at, let's say, defects that I might see. For example, broken branches or dead branches, prune those off. If you have branches that are growing basically, let's say, inward rather than outward, I would take those out. If you have branches growing too low, maybe, or hanging down, prune those out. And then if you've done that and you still have a very dense canopy, then I would do some thinning of the actual canopy itself, taking out some of the smaller branches.
You know, Charity, some of those trees also produce what we call water sprouts. They're these rank, vigorous shoots that crop up in the canopy of the tree. And we find that if we remove those in the summer, they don't come back quite as quickly as if you remove them in March. So we've talked a little bit about timing, but in this case, removal of those water sprouts is best done in the growing season.
All right, and why water sprouts? That seems like an odd name for.
Well, it's kind of rank, uncontrolled growth. They typically kind of jut up out of a branch and they grow straight up through the canopy. And they're easy to pick out because they are so vigorous. They're just unrealistically vigorous. and they're akin to the sucker growth we get around the base of trees.
That's happening in the canopy.
Yeah, in both cases, it's kind of unwanted, unnecessary growth.
All right. Here's a question from Ryan in Van Meter. My kids got blue spruce starters for Thanksgiving. The trees are growing in the standard hockey puck of organic matter and are an inch tall with their first set of needles. What do we do next?
So where are they at now?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I would assume inside, hopefully. And so,
I'm guessing they're inside.
So I would put them underneath some artificial lighting where they get some additional lighting so they can use a ordinary shop fixture, put in two 40-watt tubes, and then place that fixture within a few inches of the actual seedlings.
It's funny that we're giving out Colorado spruce. That's a tree that is, there's no love lost in some camps, and other people love them, but it's a tree that will divide families, Charity. you will have arguments around the dinner table about the usefulness of Colorado spruce. Well, I guess my recommendation would be to give the plant plenty of room, plenty of air, plenty of light. Don't crowd it, crop to the foundation. Don't crowd it next to other plants. There are some disease issues with spruce, and so give it plenty of air circulation, and that might forestall some of the problems that eventually will catch up to it.
So you want to give us a list of pros and cons that divide families?
It's a very political argument. No, actually, there are some significant disease problems with Colorado spruce, and yet there are some specimens you'll find in Iowa that are just beautiful. So it's almost a philosophical question. What do you expect from your trees? How long do you expect them to live? What do you expect them to do? Is 30 years enough? 40? 50? But there's no mistaking the disease problems that plague that species, and so people should be aware of that.
All right, but Ryan didn't ask for this.
Ryan?
In Van Meter?
I don't care. He's getting it.
All right.
He's getting what we feed him this morning.
All right.
This cuts pretty close to home, Charity. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. William is on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, William.
Good morning. Really enjoy your show. I'm in Bettendorf and a duplex condo. We've got like 18-foot wide driveways. I'm on the inside of a U-shaped street on the end, and so when they plow the snow, they come all the way down to the end of my place and then push the snow up off the street because there's no place else to put it underneath my red maple, 6-7 foot high. Now, it hasn't been this year, but in the prior years, the center leader, I guess you'd call it, at the top of it is going bare on that. And even though I try to water and everything, am I going to lose that tree, or does that have to be trimmed out?
So, William, you're describing the leader that has died back during the past growing season?
Not well, over the last couple of years,
okay.
Right? The center core.
Yeah.
The two, three long top branches, like 25-year-old maple.
Yeah. Well, obviously
that's an
operation that would have to be done by a trained arborist. And yeah, if the tissue is dead, then there's no reason to leave it there. You can have it pruned out. The greater question is what's causing it. And boy, I'm a little uncomfortable with the deposition of snow around the base of that tree, because within that snow probably is a lot of de-icing salts, and that
exactly.
doesn't
That's
do.
What I'm afraid of. It's all leached down in there, and I heard in your program earlier that you just got to water the heck out of it to try to, you know, dilute it.
Yeah, that's all you can do. So,
but it hasn't been this year, but I know it's progressively it's getting worse, and I don't want to lose that tree because it's a great tree in the south side of the house.
William, otherwise, how does the plant look? Are the leaves green in the summer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good sign, because red maple will sometimes become chlorotic or yellow on high pH soils, and so I guess that's a good sign. And you know, I don't want to draw a strong conclusion between what's happening with your snow and the dieback of that central leader. Perhaps there's something else afoot, but trimming them off would be a prudent thing to do.
Is it necessary or just wise to do that?
It's more of an aesthetic issue. Now, of course, okay. if they're large, I guess they could cause a problem if they come crashing out of the tree. But it's more of
But it's just not thinning right in the middle in the center at the top.
Yeah, it's hard to say. But yeah, you could trim them out, and the tree would look better.
Right. Thank you very much. Yep. Enjoy your show.
Yeah, thanks a lot, William. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Marty is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Marty.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a rather challenging issue. I have several black locusts, I believe that's what they're called, in my yard. And they produce a very long, very sharp thorn that if you come near it unknowingly, you could impale yourself and be very, very dangerous. And so over the last couple of years, I've tried to cut these off the base, but they grow back with vengeance. Is there anything I can do around the base of the tree to stop those from growing?
How big are the thorns in length?
Oh, gosh. I mean, mature ones that have been around for a while, they'll go to 6-7 inches. But they're like nails. They're like old iron nails.
So I'm assuming that's a honey locust rather than a black locust. The honey locust, the actual species, does have these large, very pointed thorns, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And as far as can you prevent those from growing back, I don't know of any way of doing that outside of cutting down the tree. They will come back, unfortunately. So
even if I wrapped it with some type of, I don't know, artificial bark or put tar or something on it, they'll grow right through that.
Well, I don't think that you can prevent those from coming back. Wrapping it, you have to allow the tree to grow. I don't think you can apply anything that's going to prevent, like a chemical or something of that nature, that will prevent those thorns from coming back. That's just the nature of the tree.
Marty, did you plant this tree?
No, we inherited them when we moved into the place, and you know, they provide plenty of shade, and I like having the trees. I just, with kids and grandkids running around, they're a little dangerous, so I have to continually trim them off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
These trees are anywhere from 30 to 40 feet high. They're fairly mature.
Right. Well, back in the day, we sold nothing but just plain old honey locust. We didn't traffic in cultivars back in those days. And so what you might have there is just a seedling plant that has thorns. And as Richard says, as you've experienced, they're pretty menacing.
I have like 20 of them around in 5 acres. I mean, there's a bunch of them.
Yeah. Well, get out the chainsaw.
I hate to do that, but... Yeah. It just depends on how hard I poke myself. I may just cut it down because I'm upset with it.
don't act rashly, Marty. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Jeff Iles and Richard Duran here with me today. And next up, we've got Bob on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Hi there. I'm part of a group that plants trees in Bettendorf, and we're looking at the European larch. Now, I found an article here, but it's old enough that it looks like it's printed in a font used by Gutenberg. It's by a Jeff Iles.
Oh, my God. That guy's a quack.
Now, my inner Vitosh wants to know, is this thing up to date on larches? Are there any problems with them that have developed since 2000?
You know, I've been asking Extension to use paper that just disintegrates after a year. That's a problem when things hang around. So, you know, that's one of those recommendations, darn it, I'm going to stand by, Bob. I still am a big fan of European larch. Now, is it a perfect tree? No, but it's a deciduous conifer. It gets big, so you've got to give it its space. But it has relatively few problems. Is pH tolerant, is environmentally tough. It's an introduced plant, but it does better than our native American larch. So I don't know. I still think it's a good plant, but it needs its space. But we have some beauties on campus that have been here about 100 years. So was that your question?
Yeah, that was my question. I was worried, like the blue spruce, that it may have developed something, fungi or something, a pest since you wrote that article.
I mean, there's a few insects out there, but I wouldn't consider them to be debilitating. I don't know why the plant flies under the radar screen. I've always enjoyed it, and nice yellow fall color. So as we sit here today, Bob, I'm still four square with this plant.
Great.
You can't do better than that, Bob. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you much.
Yep. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a tweet from Tom. He says, I have some 25-foot-tall arborvitaes that are blocking sunlight to the house. Can I cut off the top 5 feet or so without killing the trees?
You can, but you'll be the talk of the neighborhood. Man, that's like wearing white after Labor Day. I don't know, Tom.
Isn't it worse than white after Labor Day?
Probably.
Okay.
It is. It's much worse. You can do that, and the plants will, I mean, you're not going to kill them, but you've pretty much decapitated them, and they will look funny. So there really is no way to shrink an arborvitae. I mean, a lot of our conifers don't shrink back like you can with a lilac or a deciduous shrub. So I would argue against that. If the plants are causing you grief and trouble, you're almost better off removing them than to give them that kind of a decapitation.
How long lived are arborvitae?
You know, there are some in cemeteries that are just really old, 60, 70, 80 years, and probably longer. So it depends on the selection, but I'm guessing what he has there is one of the older ones that can live many, many years.
Yeah, and 25 feet tall, that's unusual.
Yeah, that's a monster. That's cool.
All right, but it's blocking the sunshine.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's shading too.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Neil is on the line in Fairfield. Hi, Neil.
Hi. So I have about a 20-year-old Japanese maple. When I bought it, I thought it was going to go vertical. It ends up being a bush, a horizontal bush. I don't know if the leaders got cut off or whatever, but is there any way I can get it to grow up as opposed to grow round?
Well, Neil, as you may know, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of selections of what we call Japanese maples, and they come in all different shapes and sizes. When you look at them in their native haunts, I mean, that's kind of what they do. We call them small trees, but a lot of them do tend to have very horizontal branching habits. And boy, it's hard, depending on what selection you have, it's very hard to fix that. In fact, I don't know of a good way to make that plant do something that it's not genetically programmed to do. So all you can do is kind of work with what you have. As Richard and I both talked about this morning, good branch spacing is important. You can't change the stripes of a plant that way. So I'm afraid I don't have a good answer. Now, you always could send me a picture and I could look at it and we could talk about it once I'm seeing what you're seeing. But right now I don't have any magic.
All right, Neil, thanks a lot for your call. And let's slip another call in here before the break. Roger is on the line in Eldon. Hi, Roger.
Hi.
What's your question?
The question is, I got a couple nice 30-foot blue spruces, and they're not blue. Is there any fertilizer or anything I can put on them?
Mm. Roger, this is that's a great question, because not all, in fact, that's why I purposely try not to say blue spruce when I'm referring to Colorado spruce. So what you have there is a Colorado spruce, and it's a selection of Colorado spruce that you thought you had that was more blue in color. And yet when you grow these plants from seed, there's all different shades of blue and green. And so it's hard to say what happened to yours. What was it ever blue? Did it ever have a nice blue color?
Yes, I got it when I was about 6 feet tall, when it was about 6 feet tall, and
yeah.
It was nice and blue. That's the reason why I bought it.
Sure, sure. And sometimes that blueness kind of goes away with plant age. Hard to say why that happens, but I don't know of anything you could give the plant to revive its color. That's beyond what I know. So usually
painting the plant is not recommended.
Well, if it was as easy as restoring the finish on a car, then that'd be fun, but it's not. So I don't have an answer for that one.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. Anyway, Roger, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Jeff Iles, professor and chair in the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and Jeff Iles, professor and chair in the Hort Department at ISU. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. Recently, we moved into a new house, and the backside of it has very little in the way of vegetation. I'd like to plant something permanent to line the back of the house under the windows. So it needs to be something that doesn't grow too high. Also, this is in our backyard, so it would need to be hardy enough to withstand the attentions of my two dogs. Please bear in mind that I am at best a novice when it comes to planting and taking care of anything.
Well, I would look at perennials. There are a lot of perennials that are very, very easy to grow, very reliable. Things like daylilies, peonies, irises, phlox, etc. And so you could plant where you have some color from maybe spring until late summer, early fall.
All right. And if she wanted to do something shrubbier, something that would stay smaller, that she could prune back to keep it small?
Stephanie, does she say what side of the house? Does she give a direction?
No.
That's pretty important, and so she should either call me or Richard, and we could talk at length. But sunlight exposure is really important. There's lots of plants that would have preferences, and so we need to know more. And there are trees the same way. There might be some small understory trees you could plant rather close to the house, something like serviceberry or maybe redbud that would be nice, but it'd be good to know the exposure.
All right, so more information is needed. This one's from Sharon. In one of the seed catalogs, it claims that we in northern climates can enjoy fresh citrus, and on this tree they will send. Is it worth trying? We have a nice, sunny, warm room. We could bring it inside when it gets cold next fall.
You can actually buy some dwarf citrus. They're basically a house plant, like an orange or a lemon, even a lime. So you can buy those dwarf forms. And yes, they're strictly a house plant from basically mid-September until maybe late May. You can bring them outside in the summer if you wish, and they may bear some fruit. But it's not going to produce a lot, but it's kind of a novelty, kind of a fun thing to do.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Julia is on the line in Union County. Hi, Julia.
Hi. Can you give me a recommendation for a shrub that wouldn't be any more than maybe 20 feet tall that would be impenetrable, nasty, thorny, thick? I want something that is worthy of Briar Rabbit and Sleeping Beauty that
wow.
I can plant and make a hedge.
So
And if it's invasive, well, I mean, I don't worry about that. I'll mow the border.
So you need something that's branched low, and you like thorns.
I want thorns.
I like this. I like this a lot.
I want something so we're having problems with. Well, it's complicated, but I want something that is impenetrable.
Well, I've got the perfect plant. I'm not sure how easy they are to find anymore, but there's a hawthorn called Cockspur hawthorn. So C-O-C-K-S-P-U-R, Cockspur hawthorn, that is everything that you've asked for. It's low branched, it's thick, and it has thorns that will rival those from the honey locust. And so it's not something you're going to want to walk through or even get near, but it's a tough plant. Good fall color, has some flowers that don't smell all that good, but that even adds to the ambiance. So Cockspur hawthorn, really any of the hawthorns. There's a Washington hawthorn that would also work pretty well. So you might
animals eat it.
Probably
like cattle or so that's what I'm thinking.
I see where you're going. I guess any animal might nibble on it, but they're not going to be able to get too close to the trunk, so it might suffer some damage at the perimeter, but it's not enough. It won't be enough to kill it. So okay. you have large cows or something?
Well, I just want something that will make a border.
Yeah.
Julie, I think we need a little backstory here. You're kind of killing me.
Well, we've got a neighbor who has a lot, and we just want to make sure that nothing gets loose, and maybe putting a natural border would help. And if it was tolerant of very, very wet, like runoff, manure runoff, that would help too.
Another possibility would be Osage orange, which was used as a hedging type plant to keep in livestock and other things. It does produce some thorns. So that's another possibility, Osage orange.
Yep. And those are good for Southwest Iowa then?
Oh,
yeah, they'll grow.
Oh, awesome. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck, Julia. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Rod is on the line next in Indianola. Hi, Rod.
Good morning. I was just following up on a previous caller about the honey locust.
Yes.
We raised llamas for years and had a number of honey locust trees in our pasture area, and they would get those thorns, and they have pads like a dog, not hooves. And, of course, they didn't appreciate one trying to help them by removing the thorns when their pads got infected. But I use Tordon RTU.
Yep. Tordon is a chemical you've got to know what you're doing with. It does tend to move with soil moisture, so you've had good luck with it. It didn't get away from you?
I would, like, clip off the plants. And then if it was a larger tree, I'd go just around the perimeter, the bark area.
Yeah.
And for smaller ones, I'd take like an eyedropper or a Q-tip. And I always put on latex gloves, too,
because
it's pretty toxic stuff.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And you were in a pasture situation?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd be careful in a home lawn. Obviously, you weren't in a home lawn situation or home landscape. That's a different animal altogether. So what you did sounds like you took a lot of care and precautions. I'm not sure I'd use this in my backyard, though.
But, all right. Yeah. Rod, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Scott calling from Missouri. Hi, Scott.
Hi there.
What's your question?
Well, I have what I believe is a pumpkin or a gray ash, and around springtime it starts putting out leaves. And then soon after that, they start dropping the leaves, and they have brown spots on them.
Yep. Have you ever submitted samples to, either to Iowa State or to the University of Missouri?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Because
and I'm from St. Louis area.
Okay. I don't know a whole lot about the extension system down there in Missouri, but at least at Iowa State, we have a very, very good clinic where we can look at samples and make some determinations. I'd only be shooting from the hip at guessing what you have. There are some diseases. Does this happen in the spring, you were saying?
Yeah, it's been happening for about 6 years, and it happens in the spring.
Sure.
And it does it for a while, and then it stops, and then it just finishes out the year like it's supposed to.
Yeah, well, there are some fungal diseases that we get on some ash, in fact, on a lot of species up here in Iowa. Generally, we call them anthracnose diseases, and that maybe is what you're dealing with there, but it'd be good to see some samples and to confirm that. But as you've just identified, these things, they cause some defoliation early in the spring, but then the trees recover and they carry on just fine. So they're more of a curiosity than anything else. I'm not even sure it's worth treating for.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Scott. Next up, we've got John in Van Meter. Hi, John.
Hi. I have some majestic oaks out on my acreage out in Madison County, and they're probably about 50 feet high, but they're about 6 foot around, and they're split right down the middle. And I was wondering if some of the bigger, heavier limbs, if I cut them off, would that help this tree from not splitting in two?
That's a tough. John, where are these trees? Are they kind of out by themselves, or are they in a yard?
No, I cleared the whole forest and built my house, and they're like in a row, and it's just a beautiful lane of them. I think they're got to be about 100, 150 years old, a couple of them.
Yeah. You know, it's a great question. We always look at trees and we think that if there's a flaw, that maybe if we lighten the load a bit, then they might be more prone not to break. I don't know. It's so hard to second guess those kinds of things. I hate to remove a lot of large branches from established trees because the tree needs those branches to function. Now, if I've got a branch that's associated with a flaw, then maybe I might do some pruning there. But I'm never very good at second-guessing what trees need in that way. And, of course, it's kind of irresponsible for me to even be talking about this without seeing pictures. It might be, again, I've offered this to a number of clients this morning. You might send me some photos, and we could have a chat on email. My email is just my last name, iles@iastate.edu. Might be kind of fun to see what you're looking at, and then we could talk.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Tom is on the line in Chicago. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
My wife is a Christmas nut, and I wanted to know if there's any evergreen trees out there that are out there that look like Christmas trees that only get about 6, 8, 10 feet tall. I planted a blue spruce many years ago, and it's about 30 feet tall, and I just can't get up there to put lights on it anymore. So I was wondering if there's anything out there I could plant that would be more reasonable.
Hey, Tom, what you need to do is find a nursery that traffics in dwarf conifers or garden conifers, because there are some downsized versions of our more popular conifer species that either grow very slowly or mature at much lower heights. And within the group of pines or spruce or fir, there are selections that just take their sweet time growing and really are more dwarf versions. So find a nursery that specializes in dwarf or garden conifers.
All right. I think there's a lot of market for easy-to-light conifers, for sure. And nothing worse than the half-lit.
No, I'm with you there. And you know, he mentioned that his wife likes Christmas. I wonder if she likes these Hallmark things on TV. Hallmark.
Maybe we'll talk about that another day.
Have you ever seen those, Charity?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Terrible.
Well, we can debate this. All right. Here's a question from Earl. I understand that you recommend pruning trees in late February into March, but not in midwinter. Does that pruning schedule hold true for oaks? Can I prune oaks in midwinter, or should I wait until late February?
Yeah, all the professional arborists will wait till oaks grow dormant, and they prune all winter long. And I don't mean to make it sound absolute. I mean, there is this absolute thing about not pruning oaks during the growing season, but any time during the dormant season is just fine with oaks. Just fine.
He has a follow-up here. Also, should shag bark hickory trees be pruned according to the same schedule as oak trees, or are oak trees the only tree that shouldn't be pruned unless it's dormant?
You know, maybe Vitash will phone in here. I don't know of any debilitating disease on shag bark that would limit or prohibit its pruning during the growing season. I still like that late dormant season for almost anything, but summer pruning should be fine for shag bark hickory.
All right, we've got another pruning-related question. This one's from Dave in Iowa City. I know that oak trees should be trimmed in winter when the beetles and fungus aren't a problem. How can I find the dead branches when there are few, if any, leaves left?
Well, boy, it's an acquired taste, isn't it? I mean, dead branches look different than live branches, but sometimes it means just getting up and testing them. You know, you can scrape away the bark, or if they're brittle, obviously, then that would be a dead branch. But from the ground, it might be a little hard to discern that.
All right, maybe wait another year, take notes in the summer.
Well, there you go. Take some
pictures.
Take some
photos.
All right, here's a question from Kevin. Can you keep semi-dwarf apple trees that mature to 15 by 15 or 20 by 20 trimmed to, say, 10 by 10? Any consequences? I've bought a few last season. They're overwintering in pots, but our location plans have since changed, or I might have bought dwarfs.
You can reduce their size somewhat if they have a branch that's growing kind of vertical. If you go down the branch, you might be able to find a lateral branch that's more horizontal, and you simply cut it back to that horizontal branch.
All right, let's go to the phones again. Chase on the line in Marion. Hi, Chase.
Hi, good morning. I had a question regarding a flower called a yellow lady slipper. I found one in northern Iowa a couple of years ago. Tried to do some research on it because I'd really like to transplant it, but it's a really rare flower, apparently. So I want to know if, A, I even should, or B, you know, what to do to take care of it to get it transplanted.
Okay. This is growing on private property or in the yard or?
It was on private property.
Okay. They can be kind of difficult to transplant. They like a certain environment, maybe certain soil conditions. So I would be fairly reluctant to try doing that at this point.
So if he wants a yellow lady slipper, is there a way to get one?
There are some that are actually sold in catalogs, and I actually have some in my yard. So you can actually buy them. Basically put them in a partially shaded area that has a moist soil, and add maybe some compost or peat to the soil so it has a lot of organic matter, and hopefully it's going to do okay. But you can actually buy them in certain catalogs.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Chase. Here's a question from Goldie. My palm tree has grown to the ceiling. Can I trim it at the top, or would that harm the tree?
I think that would basically, again, decapitate it, and I don't think it's going to grow anymore at that point and look kind of odd. So
that's really tricky. I guess you find a friend with a higher ceiling?
Yes, or you compost it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your question, Goldie. And we'll try to slip in one more call here. Bob is on the line in Madison County. Hi, Bob.
Yes, I've planted some windbreak trees I got from DNR, primarily red oak and some spruce trees. Is there anything that I can do, fertilizer, manure, anything to enhance their growth other than just letting them grow naturally?
Bob, one of the things I would emphasize would be to eliminate turf grass or grass competition from around the base of those plants. So keep the weeds away, keep the turf away, use mulch. You can certainly fertilize, but I'm a big fan of following proper watering protocol. Don't let them suffer from drought stress and eliminating competition from around them.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call. And here's a question from Terry in Ames. I have an ornamental pear tree. I believe it's a Cleveland pear that sends up shoots near the trunk. Can I cut them off? If so, when do I cut them off? They're a pain to mow around and they can get very tall.
Yeah, we kind of touched on this earlier on. Those are suckers and they're better off removed in midsummer. You can remove them now, but they come right back. So I'd wait till midsummer.
All right. Well, and if you get them low enough, you can just mow them, right?
You can mow them, but oftentimes they come right at the base and you might do some damage to the trunk. So you got to be careful.
All right. Well, Jeff Iles, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. Have a great weekend.
You too. Jeff Iles, professor and chair in the horticulture department at Iowa State University. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist. Of course, it's still winter, so we're doing Hort Day every other week for the most part. We're going to be back to weekly shows in March, and spring will come. Talk of Iowa is produced at Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Chelsea Hoy gave us production assistance today. We had technical assistance in Ames from Jason Burns. You can email us anytime. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.